Good evening, good morning, good afternoon. This is Neil Kulong, the managing editor of Behind the Steel Curtain. I am joined by Steel Curtain radio host Lance Williams. This is The Standard is The Standard, a Steelers podcast for a Steeler Nation. And Steeler Nation, Lance, mourns tonight the loss of personnel and scouting guru, legend, if you will, Bill Nunn, who passed away at the age of 89. It's tough to put into words exactly the value that Nunn had, not just to the Steelers organization, but the city of Pittsburgh. This is a man who has fingerprints all over the greatest draft, not in NFL history, Lance, but in professional sports history. The 1974 Pittsburgh Steelers, as well as several Hall of Fame level, multiple Pro Bowl level players before that. This is a guy who saw everything from a historical standpoint. This is a big loss for Steeler Nation, and in my opinion, the NFL draft, which starts tomorrow, which is obviously the national headline, Thursday, the first round will begin. If NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell does not begin the proceedings with some type of moment of silence for Bill Nunn, I will be offended, if not worse than that. He's done it for less. I feel that needs to happen, considering the impact that this man had on the game. What are your thoughts on him?
I would agree 100%. I would imagine that the moment of silence should include, obviously, Bill Nunn Sr., as well as Ralph Wilson, and as well as there was another gentleman that died this year, William Clay Ford. I think, you know, the NFL definitely owes those three prominent men their necessary moment in the sun, so to speak. And I would agree with you. I mean, having known Bill Nunn Jr. and my dad are very close friends, and having known the Nunn family, first of all, I'd like to send my condolences out to the Nunn family. But again, you know, he was a pillar. He's a giant. And it's not hyperbole to say that the Steelers aren't the Steelers without his contributions. And not only was he a fantastic scout, but just, you know, he was sort of the pioneer in opening up the possibility of drafting very good football players from historically black colleges. And when you look at his run from, say, 69 to 74, you know, your bookend picks are Joe Green, and on the end of that is Mike Webster. And you look at that five-year stretch and the amount of guys that they drafted. I mean, the Steelers aren't the Steelers without the contribution of that man. And fans, if you don't think so, go to the Steelers website. Go to Steelers.com. Look at all the attention that they are paying to him. Look at the picture and the statement from the organization. The picture on the draft room says the Bill Nunn draft room. I mean, that's the significance of his impact on the success of the Pittsburgh Steelers. His face is on the draft room. That's where the draft is going to be conducted tomorrow. So his impact is monumental. And Steeler fans, if you don't know who this man is, take some time out. Stop looking at mock draft number 300 and read up on this man, because he was fantastic and dynamic. And his contributions to the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, are just numerous, and it's hard to just put them in words.
There'll be plenty of heavy hearts in the Bill Nunn draft room tomorrow as the Steelers go on the clock with the 15th overall pick. And to just follow up with Lance's point about the impact that this man had, you can't truly encapsulate it if you did not come from that generation. I'm somebody that was born just outside of it, but I was put to bed with the stories of the players that man scouted, that man drafted. It was highway robbery what the Steelers got away with back in those days for the players they drafted, where they drafted them, and the return that they got on them. It's a wonder sometimes you look at it why they only won four Super Bowls. Other teams caught up to that line of thinking, that the way that Nunn, that the connections that he had with those historically black colleges, with, you know, scouring the smaller schools of the South, The hookups that he had, these are things that just simply aren't doable today. There's no way that happens. He was so far ahead of the curve as far as finding players, identifying those players, and doing what scouts really do. And this is something I don't think people really understand about him. They're not the modern internet scout like I will accept as a description of myself. They don't sit on their computer, you know, watching film that they pick up, you know, they pirate somewhere from the internet. These guys went and talked to coaches all the time. There was so much of a sales pitch involved. You couldn't get into these schools if you were not supportive of the movement toward racial equality back in those days. The Steelers brought him in because they liked what he stood for. They liked what he said. And the idea was he can be a benefit to them. And he broke down barriers for the Pittsburgh Steelers that launched them into arguably the greatest dynasty in NFL history. And obviously you and I, Lance, are going to say that's the greatest, but you could not have impacted the game more for what he was. And keep this in mind, too, all aspiring journalists out there. This guy was a writer. He wasn't a scout by trade. He made connections. He made relationships. He knew what he was looking at on film, but he got the film because he's able to speak to those coaches and to lend credibility to himself, and with it, the Pittsburgh Steelers franchise. It's beyond description the impact that this guy had.
Well, you can tell everybody, yeah, you can tell everybody, go ahead and tell everybody, I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man, yes I am, yes I am, yes I am, I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man, I believe every lie that I ever told, paid for every heart that I ever stole.
I'm Neil Kulong, the managing editor of Behind the Steel Curtain. He's Lance Williams, the host of Steel Curtain Radio. The NFL draft is tomorrow, Lance, in case you didn't notice. This is kind of a big thing.
I didn't realize.
It was shocking. I woke up this morning and thought, oh, my God, the draft is tomorrow. I put together a news budget for this. I haven't put together a real legitimate news budget since I was working in newspapers, and that was too long ago to really even care to think about. I have several dozen story ideas planned out already for Behind the Steel Curtain on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. That's how big this event is, and just obviously a cheap plug for the site. Stay tuned. We have a lot more stuff than you might think that we do. We put a lot of time into this. We have interviews. We have surprise stuff along with a lot of breakdowns. Several multimedia types of stuff. We've got videos, podcasts. Lance and I are going to be recording after giving our knee-jerk analysis to whatever player it is the Steelers select. So stay tuned. It's going to be a lot of fun. Take it in that regard. We're not trying to insult anybody who's really into the draft. We're obviously into the draft as well. We wouldn't be talking about it if we weren't. It's just the idea of the complete and total oversaturation of it and how amazing it is that people will continue, regardless of what they think that they feel about it. They're going to continue to watch it. It's very much a train wreck theory going on. Let's get into that, though, Lance, in case another thing you might not have noticed, the Steelers have the 15th overall pick in the draft. And
really?
They don't have a whole lot of depth at certain positions. The vast majority of voters, if you want to call them that, on polls that we've run on Behind the Steel Curtain the last couple weeks, basically whittle it down to the first round pick is going to be a cornerback or a wide receiver, and a smattering after that that pretty much is defensive lineman or linebacker. Three out of four of those people are really saying this is a defensive draft for the Steelers, at least in the first round. The Steelers have drafted offense, defense in consecutive years since 2005. 2006, I should say, they traded up for Santonio Holmes, making that the first consecutive year they drafted the same player since now, basically. Everything says this is an offensive player in the first round, yet the team need is probably on the defensive side of the ball. If we were at the first level to whittle this down to offense or defense, where are they going to go tomorrow at 15?
They're going defense. They have to go defense. We don't have to go defense, but they should go defense, in my opinion. I think towards the later half of the year, the last eight games, I think any fan, media guy, analyst, anybody looking at the team, you could see that the offense was starting to find its footing, starting to get an identity. Quarterback was starting to get comfortable with the system. So were the receivers. The blocking got better. The injection of Le'Veon Bell and Spaeth added some juice to the offense and stability to the offense. Although Tomlin has made statements in the offseason about how he's not looking to the past, and that doesn't mean anything, that he's not trying to necessarily hang his hat on what the performance was for the last eight games. I think if you look on both sides of the ball, it's clearly defense. Also, you look at an aging Troy Polamalu, an aging Ike Taylor. You look at some gaps in defensive line position. You look at the linebacker position. It's got to be on the defensive side of football. And this is a unit that struggled getting sacks and struggled taking the ball away. They got to get that unit better. And the formula typically for the Steelers when they win championships is you have okay offense, really good defense. Defense keeps you in the game to where your star quarterback, your franchise guy can make a play late and you win the game. They, in my opinion, must go defense in the first round.
Position-wise, do you think it will matter?
I don't think it will matter, honestly. You look at the draft. I think the draft is, if you can address a need in the immediate, great. But I think you have to look at drafts with a forward view, a two-year view out. I mean, if you look at them defensively, they have some issues at the cornerback position. I don't think Ike is going to be here beyond this year, so it makes sense to grab your cornerback now. Maybe he plays some snaps in the nickel. I don't know, maybe he competes with William Gay for that role. You get him trained in your system. He becomes a young starter with Cortez Allen. Maybe it works that way.
This is really the big thing with the Steelers, where they are as far as the cornerback position goes. William Gay is signed through 2015. Cortez Allen's a free agent after this season. The idea is they'll probably, get something worked out with Allen for long term. You can't expect Ike Taylor after that. It is possible, because nobody thought Keenan Lewis was leaving either. It is possible this team does not have a starting level cornerback signed beyond 2015. In my mind, they have to address the cornerback position. There is absolutely no doubt about that. If it's the first round pick, though, I don't necessarily think that's the end all be all of this. They've got the guy that they want. This is who it is. So I'm going to give you two names. I think it's going to be one of these two players. Darquez Dennard, cornerback out of Michigan State. Kyle Fuller, cornerback out of Virginia Tech. Which one are you taking and why?
From what I've seen, the little bit that I've seen, Fuller looks like the guy to me. He appears to be a better athlete. He appears to be a little more physical, particularly being able to support the run. I like Fuller. I don't think there's enough difference between the two where you could argue both guy wouldn't work. But in going back to your point about the cornerback position, they need, in my opinion, they need to draft two, not just one. Because, like you're saying, and nobody thought what would happen with Keenan Lewis, you might lose Cortez Allen, and all of a sudden, you have no depth at the cornerback position, and suddenly you have to go into free agency and maybe pluck two there or overspend on a guy because you haven't filled the cabinet with those guys cheaper in the draft. So I'm thinking...
Yeah, that's like exactly it, too. It's not even like... There's a difference in saying, in common conversation, that there's no depth at the cornerback position. There are no cornerbacks. They don't have any on their roster. They're not going to put Antoine Blake out there. I don't even know if he's signed. That guy from Houston that they picked up, he's not going to start for the team. They don't have any. And I agree 1,000%. They're taking two of them in this draft. I don't know if that's the first round or not. but they're taking two corners in this draft. And I wouldn't be surprised to see them go back-to-back in like first and second or second and third or something like that. They need guys that can start by next year. This year, I don't know how good it is. I wouldn't look at those guys to start right now, but they need to draft a guy who can play 700 snaps by 2015. If they can't, they've failed and they've got a problem.
Let me give you the corners that are on the roster right now. And it's interesting that they have William Gay slotted on the depth chart as of today as the starting left corner. So he's the starting left corner. Cortez is the backup. Ike is the starting right corner, followed by Isaiah Green and Antoine Blake. Good luck with that.
I think Antoine Blake took like 9 snaps at cornerback last year, and that was probably in that Patriots game. Either way, I think it's fairly obvious. Cornerback is the top defensive position of need. From a lens of, I like to look at it 3 years down the line, just considering what the rookie contracts are. By that point, that's when they're talking extension with the guy that they would have, the option year for the first round players. We're going to get into the offensive side of the ball because I have a lot of thoughts on that as well that'll probably contradict a bunch of what I just said. But I'm Neil Coulon, the managing editor of Behind the Steel Curtain. He's Lance Williams, the host of Steel Curtain Radio. You are listening to The Standard is the Standard. We're going to take a quick break. So grab a drink, put some music on. We'll be right back.
Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. I'm the man. I believe every lie that I ever told, paid for every heart that I ever stole. I paid my
card. We're into the home stretch here on The Standard is the Standard. I'm Neil Coulon, the managing editor of Behind the Steel Curtain. He's Lance Williams, the host of Steel Curtain Radio, and we are giving you our pre-draft, pre-bonanza celebration. We discussed the unfortunate passing of the late, great Bill Nunn earlier in the show, along with highlighting what is probably the biggest position of need for the Steelers in the 2014 NFL Draft, which kicks off Thursday at 7:30 p.m. Central Time, I think, right? I think it's 7:30 Central. Either way, let's dip into the offensive side of the ball, Lance, the wide receiver position. This is the thoroughbred, real breadwinner of today's NFL outside of the quarterback, which basically is the owner of the team nowadays. Your wide receivers are getting much more exposure, much more notoriety than they have in the past, to the point where I quoted an article on this a while ago from a very tenured columnist in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Bob McGinn. He said he spoke to a longtime personnel executive who said today, between a shutdown corner and a high-level wide receiver, he would take the wide receiver. It didn't always used to be that way. Now it's just simply about the advantage that the offensive player has. So, as you had mentioned and I followed up with, in regards to the cornerback position, it's a position of need, obviously. The new school thought in management in general is not so much filling the gaps to become well-rounded. It's becoming super dominant at the one thing that you're really good at. The Steelers right now are a better offensive team, on paper at least, than they are a defensive team. I know how weird that is to say and how much it does not parallel to success historically. But the reality is, with the versatility that they have, and this is exactly what they wanted to build, they've got a good set of offensive players. If I'm on the clock at 15, I'm Kevin Colbert, I see LSU wide receiver Odell Beckham there, I'm taking him. I don't care what the state of the defense is. A guy like him fits so well into our offense, and he should not be on the board at 15. If he's there, I'm going to take him because I'm going to create a lethal personnel package that can put speed on the field, versatility on the field, along with Le'Veon Bell and Heath Miller with Ben Roethlisberger as quarterback. I'm going to run no huddle all the time. All the time. I'm going to give Ben Roethlisberger four plays. He's going to pick and choose from that. He's going to go out in the field and he's going to create. I love Beckham at that spot. I don't know if you have thoughts on him or not, but I'm just going to rant about Odell Beckham.
Here's my thought. I mean, I think you can look at it, and this is what makes the draft, and I think this is what makes football in general, you know, very interesting. I think you can make a very good argument where you can slice it either way. I was just trying to figure out, you know, what the Steelers scored per game last year. But I think you can make a reasonable argument that if you add Odell Beckham to the offensive side of the ball and it gives you, let's say his addition gives you 3.5 points a game more, maybe it factors into a field goal more in scoring, you would be hard pressed to argue that any defensive player that you draft is going to have that same impact. With that being said, if you add 3.5 points to your offense and your defense plays a monicum better, you know, your plus minus is that much bigger and you're going to win that many more games with just taking a very base incremental gain in defense, but taking a bigger leap in offense. So it depends on where your lens is. You can definitely see it that way. But I think that only works, and it works for the Steelers, that philosophy, if you have the quarterback in place, and they do, to be able to take advantage of the rules and be able to sling it to all these different weapons and, in fact, score a bunch of points. Because I'll take 30 points a game, and I'll deal with the rest of it. If I get to the Super Bowl and get crushed by Seattle, so be it. Give me 28 to 30 points a game, we'll figure the rest out. So I can see where that mentality makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying, too. If you have the ability, and let's, you know, just to put this into perspective, I'm not an advanced stats guy, but if Odell Beckham comes to the Steelers and he is directly responsible for an increase of 3.5 points a game, he's probably the MVP of the league. I mean, that's a huge figure. And Steelers are just, I'm going through the schedule off the top of my head, and I'm sure, you know, I'm wrong one way or another about this, but they're probably a 10-6, if not an 11-5 team with 3.5 points more a game. The average, I believe it was 23 a game in the first 8 games of the season, with 28 over the last 8 games. And there are several factors to that. I don't want to put it all on the no-huddle offense like many people do. The reality is you had the right players back, and they had continuity. Everybody was on the same page over that stretch. There is something to be said about improving your defense if the offense is going really well. I'm not denying that, and I'm not even saying that offense is going to be where they go with that 15th pick. Keep in mind, too, they have 9 draft picks. It's not as if, you know, the first one is everything. It's a big part of it, but they're going to get a good football player wherever it is they draft with the 15th pick. The key thing here is fit. Who's the right guy to bring in at the right time? You can get other quality players at different positions all over the draft. You really can. Who's the right fit at the right spot? Let's look at a couple other guys as well. Rashid Hageman is a guy that I've spent a lot of time watching. He and I are from the same kind of area. Let's just say that. He's a phenomenal athlete. When he's focused, he's concentrated, he's motivated to play. I don't think we saw anybody, including Jadeveon Clowney, who dominated as much as Hageman did when he was ready to play. I don't know. I highly doubt it. If you happen to watch the Minnesota Golden Gophers bowl game against Syracuse, it was a joke watching Hageman in that game. He completely destroyed that team. If that was more like, you know, his agent that, of course, he didn't sign at the time, got into, you know, his head, making sure that he knew that this is the game scouts are really going to watch. You want to leave your mark. You want to go out in the right way. He completely shredded whoever it is that they put out at him. Just completely dominated him. He's really big. He's really strong. He's really quick. He's a guy that can take over a game at two different spots. To me, that's where defense is going. It's your versatile defensive lineman. Stephon Tuitt is another guy. Notre Dame, I get that he didn't have quite the best 2013 season that people thought that he would, but he's that kind of player, you know, somebody that can play inside and out in different situations. Doesn't have to be, you know, this guy is drafted, he's going to play 90% of the defensive snaps at one spot. Defenses don't need to play like that. And people think that the Steelers are completely in the box all the time with a 3-4 alignment and every player has to play in the same spot. They don't realize how often Cameron Hayward stood up last year. He rushed off the edge as an outside linebacker plenty often. He lined up inside. In fact, we're going to be breaking him down maybe right after the draft or maybe even during the draft, looking at him as a pass rusher from where he came. There's a play against Miami. He walked the left guard back into the backfield, and he rushed on his own. He backed him up into Tannehill and got the sack. It's absolutely insane. He's not a guy that you need to put on the edge come hell or high water. You can get him inside. He can move, you know. Players like that, guys that have versatility at different positions, is more important to me right now than locking ourselves in cement at one particular spot. It's foolish. You don't need to do that. And LeBeau's been doing this stuff for years. People just don't notice for whatever reason. So
Let me jump back to one particular spot. Let me jump back real quick into what we were talking about scoring, because I was able to pull up the points per game. Last year, you were right. Steelers were basically at 24 points a game. If they added, and 3.5 is a lot. I mean, that's a field goal a game. That's a ton of points. Let's just say it's 2. Let's say it's 2.5. And they get to 26.5. At 26.5, last year, you're talking about Seattle at 26.1, Green Bay at 26.1, Kansas City at 26.9, the Bengals at 26.9. Then you go Dallas at 27.4. Didn't make the playoffs. All the teams that I named before made the playoffs. Eagles, 27.6, playoffs. Patriots, 27.8, playoffs. Bears, 27.8. I don't think the Bears made the playoffs, if I
barely,
recall correctly.
They were like last out. They were the same as the Steelers.
27.8. Denver, of course, a phenomenal 38 points a game. So what it tells you is that some of these teams, probably, except for Seattle, weren't very good defensively. Like Green Bay was not very good defensively. Save for Dallas and Chicago, if you score points, if you can get to that 26 points per game threshold, you're going to have a very good opportunity to make the playoffs, even if you play average defense, just merely because your points for and points against, it's going to be around 5 to 6 points.
You don't even have to look at the stats for that. Just look at the last 8 games of the season. They averaged 28 points a game, and they went 6-2. And frankly, they should have won both the games they lost. Offensively, the Steelers against Ravens, that's a different story. Sanders catches that ball 9 times out of 10. At least I hope that he does if he's going to be paid the way he is now. Against Baltimore, that's a different story. That Miami game was a complete and total defensive meltdown. There's no doubt about that. What they gave up game, they scored points in those games. And many times it should have been enough to win. They had the opportunities to win those games. Down the stretch, the key thing, though, was the defense falling apart. But, you know, sometimes the best defense is a good offense, and you need to look at where they're going defensively. For all the Warren Sapp talk, and Mark Cabali of the Tribune Review wrote about this recently, this defense has gotten plenty younger. It's not a question of them being young or being too old anymore. I wrote about that all the time last year. What's killing them defensively is not their age, their youth. When you have to put guys like Vince Williams out on the field, that's what's going to happen. That's how you give up 4.8 yards a carry. Everyone wants to blame Steve McClendon. It's your rookie sixth-round pick. No rookies start in Dick LeBeau's defense. They have 2 of them in the linebacker positions alone, and neither of them were consistently even average. They weren't. Jarvis Jones was not a good pro player last year. There were like 29 rookies who had more sacks than he did. Vince Williams was a terrible run defensive linebacker. Just terrible. They didn't have the skills. So the idea of bringing in rookies now to address the defense is laughable. They did that last year. The rookies are what hurt them. Don't worry so much about that. You can't bring rookies in to make an impact. It's not going to happen. It just doesn't in this defense. They don't play them.
Yeah, rookies would just be depth. The only thing, and of course, you know, you follow the players a lot more closely than I do, but if what everyone is saying about the wide receiver position and the depth of it, you would think that they might be able to address that position later in the draft and not with the first round selection, because in the past 5 years, they've been very successful with that formula. That would be my only reservation if they went the route of the wide receiver. But we absolutely know in this draft, you're going to see a defensive lineman, you're going to see a wide receiver selected, and you're going to see a cornerback. Those are three positions I think we can all take to the bank.
You've been listening to The Standard is the Standard. I'm Neil Coulong, the managing editor of Behind the Steel Curtain. He's Lance Williams, the host of Steel Curtain Radio. Thank you for listening. Stick around, though, because we're going to be doing more of these, probably a little bit shorter, little segments between each Steelers pick throughout the weekend. So stick around. We'll see you then.